I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. The U.S. on Wednesday paused intelligence sharing with Ukraine, the latest dramatic reversal in what had been vital military cooperation as Washington helped Kyiv battle a brutal Russian invasion. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
The move stands to significantly hamper Ukraine's ability to defend itself in the midst of the largest conflict in Europe since the Second World War. And it further piles pressure on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to cooperate with U.S. President Donald Trump's demands in convening peace talks with Russia. On Monday, Washington halted military aid to Kyiv following a disastrous Oval Office meeting last week, in which Trump and Zelensky engaged in a shouting match before the world's media. The clash delayed the signing of a Ukraine-U.S. minerals deal. But on Tuesday, Trump said he received a letter from Zelensky in which the Ukrainian leader said he was willing to come back to the negotiating table. The White House says it's now reconsidering.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. The White House on Wednesday said U.S. officials have had ongoing talks and discussions with Hamas officials. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It's the first known direct engagement since the State Department designated Hamas a foreign terrorist organization in 1997.
These are ongoing talks and discussions.
And comes with the Israel-Hamas ceasefire in the balance. White House spokesman Caroline Levitt says Israel has been consulted. Egyptian and Qatari officials had been serving as mediators with Hamas for the U.S. and Israel since the 2023 attack on Israel that sparked the war. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. A divided U.S. Supreme Court ruled against the Trump administration on Wednesday, upholding a lower court decision that the government cannot withhold payment to foreign aid organizations for work they've already performed. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Pursuing what he has called a, quote, America First agenda, Trump ordered a 90-day pause on all foreign aid in his first day back in office. That order and ensuing stop work orders halting U.S. Agency for International Development operations around the world have jeopardized delivery of life-saving food and medical aid, throwing global humanitarian relief efforts into chaos. Aid organizations accused Trump in lawsuits of exceeding his authority under federal law by stepping into an area that's a matter for Congress. A Washington-based U.S. district judge last month ordered the administration release approximately $2 billion in funding to contractors and grant recipients. Trump appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. His solicitor general wrote in a filing that the lower court order should be blocked, saying it would, quote, unlawfully commandeer federal payment processes. But Chief Justice John Roberts and fellow conservative Amy Coney Barrett joined the court's three liberal members in rejecting the Trump administration's appeal.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. The United States Justice Department has charged eight leaders or members of a Chinese hacking company, two additional hackers, as well as two Chinese law enforcement officials in a global cyber espionage campaign that's been targeting U.S. agencies, dissidents, and news organizations. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Law enforcement officials accused the Chinese government of paying private companies and contractors to target people of particular interest to Beijing. There are two indictments. One charges officials with a private hacking company known as iSoon. The other charges two Chinese hackers in a for-profit hacking campaign that targeted U.S. technology companies, think tanks, defense contractors, and healthcare systems. Donna Warder, Washington.
President Trump is granting a one-month exemption on his stiff new tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada for U.S. automakers. Worries persist that the newly launched trade war could crush domestic manufacturing. The announcement comes after Trump spoke with leaders of the big three automakers, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis on Wednesday.
So does he expect them to be able to shift production within a month?
He told them that they should get on it, start investing, start moving, shift production here to the United States of America where they will pay no tariff. That's the ultimate goal.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
reacts to Donald Trump's speech to Congress.
The gloves are off, but it really is all about being the gloves off for America, because the optimism he brings and the policy lays out, they just make sense.
What will losing American military aid mean to Ukrainian soldiers?
This means that thousands of people will die.
And foreign policy in the age of economic warfare.
So the U.S. is very good, if it wants to, at creating economic pressure on other countries. What we're less good at is actually translating that pressure into the political and diplomatic outcomes that we seek.
Today is Thursday, March 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. Tuesday night in Washington, President Donald Trump addressed Congress for the first time in his second term. The speech was long and wide-ranging, touching on government spending, immigration, tariffs, social issues, and more.
Just as in his inaugural address, Trump said he would secure the borders and shrink the size and scope of the federal government he now leads. However, many of the facts the president cited to back up his assertions have been proven false or misleading by fact checkers. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
In his first address to Congress in his second term, President Donald Trump gave U.S. lawmakers a blueprint for the years ahead. Republican lawmakers praised that vision. Republican Representative Monica Dela Cruz.
He's going to keep securing the border. He's going to make America prosperous again, secure again, and give us back the American dream that we lost under the Biden administration.
And said they appreciated Trump's fighting spirit. Republican Representative Doug LaMalfa.
The gloves are off, but it really is all about being the gloves off for America, because the optimism he brings and the policy lays out, they just make sense.
Some lawmakers said Trump did not address Americans' economic concerns. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
One thing Donald Trump did not mention last night was a real serious plan to bring down costs, the number one thing Americans wanted to hear most. Instead, Donald Trump doubled down on his plans to send costs skyrocketing by starting a trade war with Canada and Mexico.
One Republican in the House of Representatives told VOA that tariffs will restore America's economic strength. Republican Representative Mike Collins.
You'll bring American ingenuity, you'll bring those companies back to our shores, and you'll make the products cheaper because you'll be right here in the United States.
Republicans also told VOA their voters want Congress to renew the 2017 tax cuts. Again, Representative Dela Cruz.
They're concerned about the Trump tax cuts going away. And so this will affect not only small business owners, which are largely Hispanic in my district, but it'll affect the everyday average American family. Their taxes are going to increase by over $1,200. And that is enough for 6 weeks of groceries for the average American family.
Hakeem Jeffries, the top House Democrat, criticized the budget cuts Republicans may need to pass those tax cuts.
Republicans aren't trying to bring the country together. They are tearing us apart. Republicans aren't trying to move America forward. They want to turn back the clock.
U.S. lawmakers are also closely monitoring the status of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship. Republicans said a letter from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky offering to reopen negotiations with the U.S. was the result of Trump's tough stance. Representative Ryan Zinke.
Obviously, the letter, he had rethought it and said, you know what? Maybe President Trump is the most important and the most powerful man in the world, and I'm not. And maybe we can't win a war without the United States.
But one House Democrat told VOA he is concerned about the state of the relationship. Representative Adam Gray.
I think we need to support Ukraine. They're a critical ally. We made commitments to Ukraine that we need to keep, and I believe in honoring America's word.
U.S. lawmakers' attention now turns to funding the U.S. government past a March 14th deadline. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Shifting now to Europe. President Trump's push for an end to the war in Ukraine, his cutoff of military aid to Kyiv, and his heated encounter last week with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky have all been watched carefully in Russia.
Trump's actions have also exposed a widening rift between Moscow and Europe as the Kremlin blasts the EU's efforts to help Ukraine continue the war. Elizabeth Chernoff narrates this report.
After years of clashing with Washington over its military support for Kyiv, many in Moscow are watching with undisguised glee the rift between the U.S. and Ukraine, highlighted by last week's angry encounter in the Oval Office between Trump and Zelensky. The Russian media called the meeting in Washington a disaster and a humiliation for the Ukrainian president. The Kremlin says it is ready for peace and accuses Ukraine and European nations of working to prolong the war. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov blasted the proposal to put European peacekeepers on Ukrainian soil.
Trump understands everything. He said that it is too early to talk about the settlement. You can discuss this issue, but you will need the consent of the parties. He is behaving correctly. And these people, just like their peacekeepers plan in Ukraine, are a continuation of the Kyiv regime's incitement to war against us.
Some see the peace proposed by the Kremlin as Russia's victory and Ukraine's capitulation.
Moscow wants peace on Moscow's terms. And in my analysis, in my view, it's a peace that allows Russia to pursue its goals, to control Ukraine. So this is a Russian version of peace that I'm afraid is not able to reconcile with the Ukraine that wants independence and the Europe that thinks that states should be able to choose their own destiny.
Others doubt that Russian President Vladimir Putin really wants to seek peace.
Putin really hasn't given much of an indication that he, you know, is desperate to end the war. With, you know, with Russian troops slowly, you know, advancing in the east, you know, Putin probably feels that, you know, he's better able to, you know, sustain a long war of attrition, more so than, you know, Ukraine.
Muscovites who agreed to talk to us said they are willing to continue the war if Zelensky does not choose diplomacy.
If negotiations are to be held, it should only be on the basis of establishing Russian victory, because we have to look at the reality on the ground. We are winning.
In my opinion, the way out now is for our army to move forward.
Putin has not commented on last week's angry exchange between Trump and Zelensky. The Kremlin is waiting for President Trump to make his next move after his speech before the U.S. Congress Tuesday, when the U.S. leader quoted a letter from Zelensky saying the Ukrainian president is ready to negotiate peace immediately. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News.
In a related story, President Trump's pause on military aid shipments to Ukraine are, his administration says, aimed at forcing all sides to peace talks. European leaders have said it's vital to continue weapons shipments to Kyiv, but there are doubts over how long Ukraine can keep on fighting. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
As news broke overnight Monday of the U.S. decision to halt military aid to Kyiv, Russian drones continued to rain down on Ukrainian cities. Ukrainian lawmakers say the consequences of Washington's decision will be stark.
This means that thousands of people will die.
West of Donetsk, Ukraine, near the town of Pokrovsk, the war grinds on.
We fire an Italian howitzer, but we get a lot of ammunition, including 105-millimeter caliber from the U.S. It is NATO standard, which is used in both Europe and the U.S. But whether Europe will be able to supply us, I hope it will.
Can Europe make up for the shortfall of military aid from the U.S.?
There are certain systems ranging from Patriot missiles all the way through to spare parts for the Abrams tanks and Bradley personnel carriers that the Ukrainians are using, that the only way the Europeans can get is by buying them on the open market, and that is going to take time.
But Ukraine is increasingly producing its own weapons.
Probably about half the weapons which Ukraine is now using are provided by its own defense industry. And of the remainder, it's about half and half between the United States and the others, including the Europeans.
The U.S. provides other crucial assistance, including shipping Western weapons into Ukraine.
And finally, the U.S. plays a very important role in providing information, intelligence to the Ukrainian forces.
The Trump administration says the halt in military aid is, quote, to ensure that it is contributing to a solution.
Neither Europe, nor the United States, nor the Ukrainians can continue this war indefinitely. So it's important that everybody come to the table.
Britain's Prime Minister said Sunday that a coalition of the willing would continue to support Ukraine.
Vice President Vance's claim that a lot of the European leaders who on social media and in public are four square behind Kyiv, but in private they're actually much more skeptical, is not entirely incorrect. Do you essentially continue to hollow out your own armed forces and also alienate your most powerful security ally and guarantor in the name of defending Ukraine?
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appealed to the Trump administration Tuesday, writing on X that Ukraine was committed to peace. For Ukrainians suffering under Russian bombardment, the cut in U.S. aid is a bitter outcome.
I hope that he will change his mind. The victim of aggression cannot be guilty of everything and be punished in addition to that.
Maybe Europe can help somehow. The hope is only on Europe now, no one else.
Russia, meanwhile, welcomed Washington's decision to halt military aid to Ukraine, saying it may help, quote, to settle the situation by peaceful means. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. French President Emmanuel Macron said Wednesday he will confer with European allies on the idea of using France's nuclear deterrent to protect the continent in the face of Russia's threat. Macron made the comments in a televised address to the nation. France is the only nuclear power in the European Union.
The Vatican says Pope Francis has increased his physical activity today. He called the Catholic parish priest in Gaza, and he marked the start of Lent by receiving ashes on his forehead. The Pope is still receiving oxygen through a nasal tube and will resume the use of a non-invasive mechanical mask for the night. He remains in stable condition.
White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt says U.S. officials have had ongoing talks and discussions with Hamas officials. It's the first known direct engagement between the U.S. and Hamas since the State Department designated the group as a foreign terrorist organization in 1997. Leavitt declined to provide details on the substance of the talks. The move is in stark contrast to longstanding U.S. policy not to negotiate with terrorists. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope.
And I'm Steve Karish. Taking a look now at American domestic politics, some see the beginning of a trade war as President Trump has imposed tariffs on Canada and Mexico and some additional tariffs on China. To see how this affects some small businesses, VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti visited a family whiskey business in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Northern Virginia.
It's mashing day at Catoctin Creek Distilling Company. The bubbling rye lends an aroma of baked bread.
Fry was the original. It was really where it started.
Becky and Scott Harris distill rye whiskey. Rye spirits were aged in Virginia more than 100 years before the country's first tariffs. Foreign tariffs, sealed into law by the nation's first president, George Washington. Now, tariffs under the country's current president.
25% on Canada and 25% on Mexico.
Are upsetting this company's attempts to sell its rye whiskey abroad.
This makes exports a much harder lift, right? Because anybody buying my products then has to pay that tariff. And that's something that they won't do.
So not only is distribution in Mexico and Canada impacted, but also raw materials, like these glass bottles, even though they're made in America.
Big producers typically buy Mexican and Chinese glass, but after the U.S. presidential election, they switched to the American company.
We may actually run out of American glass in the next 2 months and have to order some imported glass at a higher price in order to keep product flowing.
The Harris's planned expansion to Mexico and Canada is crushed, with Canadian shop owners now removing their rye whiskey and other American-made liquor from store shelves.
We were in process of getting an order from France, and the French distributor told us that, no, it's just not a good time now for American products to go over there.
President Donald Trump says imposing tariffs will motivate world leaders to stop the flow of illegal immigrants and drugs.
But we need Mexico and Canada to do much more than they've done, and they have to stop the fentanyl and drugs pouring into the USA. They're going to stop it.
The president's supporters understand tariffs.
But the tariffs, I think, are necessary for leverage, okay? And to make things fair when it comes to us purchasing things from other countries purchasing things from us.
The stock market disagreed, tumbling two straight days on Wall Street. Desmond Lachman is with the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative group.
The hope has to be that the stock market's decline will cause the administration to dial back on this trade policy, because a trade war is really a lose-lose proposition.
But until then, Lachman says the cycle of tariffs and retaliatory tariffs will continue over and over again. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Purcellville, Virginia.
Looking now at halted USAID payments, on Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court said the Trump administration is not allowed to withhold payment to foreign aid organizations for work they already performed. Reuters' Zachary Goldman has this report.
A divided U.S. Supreme Court ruled against the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday, upholding a lower court's decision that the government cannot withhold payment to foreign aid organizations for work they've already performed. The legal setback comes as the Republican president moves to pull the plug on American humanitarian projects around the world. Pursuing what he has called a, quote, America First agenda, Trump ordered a 90-day pause on all foreign aid in his first day back in office. That order and ensuing stop work orders halting U.S. Agency for International Development operations around the world have jeopardized delivery of life-saving food and medical aid, throwing global humanitarian relief efforts into chaos. Aid organizations accused Trump in lawsuits of exceeding his authority under federal law by stepping into an area that's a matter for Congress. Here's New York University law professor Peter Shane.
Departments, agencies, offices get set up through congressional authority. Either Congress writes the organization plan, or, you know, it can give power to the president to set some things up. The president can set things up within what's called the executive office of the president. But, you know, USAID was created by statute, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau created by statute, Department of Education created by statute. Those statutes cannot be, you know, effectively repealed by executive action.
A Washington-based U.S. district judge last month ordered the administration release approximately $2 billion in funding to contractors and grant recipients. Trump appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. His solicitor general wrote in a filing that the lower court order should be blocked, saying it would, quote, unlawfully commandeer federal payment processes. But Chief Justice John Roberts and fellow conservative Amy Coney Barrett joined the court's three liberal members in rejecting the Trump administration's appeal. Conservative Justices Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh dissented from the decision. The court did not provide a rationale for its unsigned order on Wednesday.
That's Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman.
Our next guest says that America has pioneered a new world order, using hard-hitting economic warfare to confront global crises and to quash rivals. Edward Fishman is the author of Choke Points, American Power in the Age of Economic Warfare.
We are living in an age of economic warfare. Sanctions, export controls, tariffs, they've become the primary way that big countries compete with one another. It's very clear that the United States has been doing this now for at least two decades. But it's also now true that China, Russia, the European Union, Japan, all major countries are really looking at the interdependent global economy as a thing that can be weaponized against each other. And I think this is just such a major sea change from the 1990s when economic relations were seen as win-win.
Well, isn't the idea of economic warfare older than that? I mean, there have been sieges, there's been blockades and barricades for, you know, as long as there's been armies and people, right?
That's a great question and very true. You know, economic warfare is as old as history. I think the thing that has changed is the ease at which governments can employ these economic weapons and also the impact. And I'll give you an example here. So if you go to the 1990s, kind of the canonical example of sanctions in the 1990s was the United Nations embargo against Iraq. And that embargo, to make it work against basically Iraq's oil sales, you needed a 13-year, 24/7 naval blockade of Iraqi ports. You needed American sailors on ships patrolling the Persian Gulf 24/7 for over a decade. And so as a result, even as recently as the 90s, economic warfare was really just an offshoot of military force, right? You needed the Pentagon basically to pull it off. In the wake of hyperglobalization in the 90s, with the interdependent supply chains and financial markets that were created, it gave the United States the power to weaponize these choke points in the global economy, like the US dollar financial system, like semiconductor supply chains, so that today, the director of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, an agency within the Treasury Department, can sign a document in her office and impose sanctions that are an order of magnitude more aggressive even than that long UN embargo of Iraq in the 1990s.
So now we know what's happening. How is it working? Are our adversaries feeling the pain of this economic war? Are there unintended consequences? What's happening in other countries?
So what is very clear is that the United States is very effective at creating economic damage in foreign countries, right? I mean, the United States is the most powerful economy and critically controls the most important choke points, and the most important of all is the dollar. So the U.S. is very good, if it wants to, at creating economic pressure on other countries. What we're less good at is actually translating that pressure into the political and diplomatic outcomes that we seek. And what I'd say, though, is that this is no different from military force, right? The U.S. is the most powerful military in the world and has been very effective at doing things like overthrowing governments in Iraq and Afghanistan, but less good at actually getting long-term political solutions to problems. And so I think economic warfare has some of the same pathologies as military force.
The issue of the day, I don't need to tell you, is tariffs. Now, you've been talking about tariffs as one of the weapons in America's quiver to inflict pain on other countries. A lot of analysts are saying that the tariffs Donald Trump is imposing will hurt Americans as well.
That's true. I think they will, especially because what Trump is doing is he's deploying tariffs not against just our adversaries like, you know, China, but also against our allies, you know, Canada and Mexico, America's two largest trading partners. So I think it's very difficult for the United States to be waging economic warfare against so many countries at once without the American people really suffering. And so I think that that is what's novel about Trump. It's not that he's using these weapons. You know, Joe Biden used them, Barack Obama used them. In fact, he's deploying them against friends and foes alike and basically every country is potentially in the firing line.
And I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there for today. Edward Fishman is the author of Choke Points, American Power in the Age of Economic Warfare. He also teaches at Columbia University. Professor Fishman, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on the program.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.